KBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming
ABC
on the Civic
News
Media app.
I'm Andy Field. The former Marine who was wrongfully detained in Russia, then released in the prisoner swap, Trevor Reed, has been injured while fighting in Ukraine, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Mr. Reed was not engaged in any activities on behalf of the U.S. government.
Pierre says Reed was taken by a non-government organization to Germany for medical help. President Biden announcing a new rule that would compel health insurance companies to offer the same mental health coverage as physical health plans.
Today, my administration is announcing new steps to dramatically expand access. Our plans would require health insurance plans to identify the gaps and the mental health care that they provide.
The rule must still go through a public comment period. The eldest son of LeBron James, Bronny James, suffered a cardiac arrest during practice yesterday, was taken to the hospital, where a family spokesperson says he is in stable condition. 18-year-old is an incoming freshman at the University of Southern California. This is ABC News. It is the largest rally yet for the Screen Actors Guild. Hundreds of SAG-AFTRA members filled a city block in New York's Times Square, calling on studios to negotiate a fair contract. That included actor Steve Buscemi.
Fair pay, revenue sharing, health care, retirement funding, a fair casting process, AI protection, and fair compensation.
SAG-AFTRA joined the Writers Guild of America on the picket line 12 days ago after the unions were unable to reach a contract agreement with studios over pay, health care, and protections from artificial intelligence. U.S. consumer confidence increased to its highest level in 2 years thanks to easing inflation. A Greek Air Force water-dropping plane crashed while fighting a wildfire. It killed both pilots. Google's parent company Alphabet reporting a second quarter net income of more than $18 billion, results that are fueled by steady demand for cloud services and a rebound in advertising. Andy Field, ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For the talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what you need to know. What was thought to be a plane crash is now being called a forced landing. The plane went down early this morning near the EAA Air Venture. According to the Oshkosh Fire Department, they received a call a little after 7:30 that a plane went down just east of the north-south runway near Whitman Airport. Officials say the plane lost power after taking off. The pilot was the only passenger on board and was able to get out of the plane. He was taken to the hospital and treated for injuries. It appears that Powerball has some competition. Last week, the jackpot of $1 billion went to a single winner in Los Angeles. Mega Millions apparently did not like being upstaged. The current Mega Millions jackpot is also approaching $1 billion. The prize for tonight's drawing is $820 million. At these prices, you can't afford not to play. An air quality alert has been issued until 11 p.m. tonight for Fond du Lac, Sheboygan, Brown, and Door counties. Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
It's so hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago, and that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Devil's Advocates Radio.
The entire light beer industry is under attack from the right at this time. Apparently, that they no longer have women in bikinis selling the beer.
I would suggest, and this is on the Fox Entertainment Network.
I believe it's the Fox News. Well,
well, I just hope I don't get to the Captain Morgan and Diet Cokes, man. That'd be a sad day.
The Devil's Advocates Radio with Dom and Crute. Weekdays 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
A guy named Bill out in Econowalk. Bill's got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, you raise the bar high for integrity. You are a community radio station, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin.
Daily conversations about Wisconsin's latest headlines and stories. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to go back and wrap up our coverage of Netroots and the folks that we had tons of interviews. We talked to tons of people while we were there over the three-day span and wanted to make sure that everyone got some airtime. Today, we are in Washington, D.C. for an event, hopefully one that's going to help us grow and get a little bit bigger and share some more thoughts with other folks across the country. So this is a recorded program. You know, we were back at Netroots over last weekend. Had an incredible time. What's interesting, though, is some folks took offense to my characterization of these being folks on the left, on the far left, and understand a number of them, yeah, absolutely. I find it interesting how we make this far right, far left stuff. I guess it's based on where you see yourself, and this is one of those moments where it made me stop and think, because I look at the folks that I met at Netroots as the other goalpost in our political dynamic. Folks who are pushing for, you know, a lot more than our system is able to give right now. And look, I look at them as really important. It's kind of like going back to the 20s and the 30s when communist organizers were so important. Not that I would have been a communist, but you need them to push the bounds. You need people to go, look, we need to expand the ability of people to get better wages, hours, conditions, life conditions. There, you need people who are pointing in that direction. Now, look, the right doesn't run out of people who are telling us how to live our lives and the morality police. You do need the other side of the spectrum of people saying, you know, leave me the you-know-what alone. I'm going to do whatever I want. And it's one of those moments where, you know, I had a number of back and forths with folks, and it comes down to where you find yourself. I always thought of myself as, you know, as fairly left, fairly liberal, fairly progressive. As the polls keep moving to the outer reaches, I find myself being a center left. There are things that I want to do. There are things that I want to see that, you know, somebody, that's socialism. And you go, yeah, because it's good for the working class. And I had to reiterate this a number of times over the last several days as, you know, a number of people were quite miffed, you know, because they thought I was one of them. And I am. I want people to lead their best lives. I want people to be able to do what they need to do. But I'm not out on the extreme. I'm someone who wants to get things done. Look, I'm not a purist, and I've never claimed to be. I take a win. When we can raise the minimum wage, take the win. We should be fighting for much higher. It's like everything. You take the win and then you work for more. You don't say, no, we're not going to take the win. We're just going to keep working for more, because it's not helpful. And I know my purest friends are going to say, well, then we don't get what we need. And I agree. But there's a point at which you can't make, what's that saying? You can't make the perfect, the possible happen when you're looking for the perfect. I'm of someone who says, look, let's make what's possible and let's work for perfect. Let's strive for that more perfect union. Let's strive for that better opportunity. And over the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking with folks who are doing just that. Folks who are sharing their work and maybe helping us to come right along. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And especially if you disagree. Those are the places where I think we have the best learning opportunities, the place where we have the best opportunity to test our own beliefs. So email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Quick break, right back, stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE. We support our nation's military and our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders and provide services to our nation's seniors across the country and here in Washington, D.C. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to Netroots Nation here in Chicago as we our final day. One of the things I love about coming to these things is you get to bump into people that you've had on the show, 100 or 200 times, and you've never really met in person, and we've had a bunch of that. A bunch of people who follow us, a bunch of people who see us on TV and go, oh my God, I've seen you! And you get to a fist bump or handshake, or some people have to do the hug thing, not my thing, but a lot of people need to do that, and I'm okay with it in these environments, I guess. But one of the folks came by, a good friend of the show, Laura Packard. She's the executive director of Healthcare Voter, healthcarevoter.org. She has been been on the show a lot. In fact, she was doing the weekly extra podcasts while we were doing them, and we're going to get back to them. Laura, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So good to see you again. You are like the hardest working woman in nonprofit healthcare related politics all over the place, literally all over the place.
Well, I'm in Chicago right now, but I was on a bus tour in April going across the country talking about the how Republicans were threatening our economy with the refusing to vote to raise. And now I'm going to be on another bus in August, traveling across the country, talking about healthcare for Protect Our Care. So hopefully I will be coming to a city near you next month, August.
And we'll make sure we'll have to get you on to prop that and get people out to see you, and maybe they can hug you too.
Sounds good.
But here's the thing, and this is where, when you're talking about healthcare, this is one of those things that should be nonpartisan. It should go across lines. Everybody I talk to, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever, nothing, they all want to make sure that if they get sick, they get the care that they need and they don't go broke. How hard is this to figure out? How hard is it to come to a policy to make sure that we have all got health security?
Well, it shouldn't be this hard, but unfortunately, a lot of people make money off of it being hard. And I just had the honor of going to the White House last week, where President Biden is doing something to rein in junk insurance policies, which are where you pay money every month to your insurance company, but they don't actually cover you when you get sick. So finally, they are rolling back some of the things that happened under the Trump administration that made it easier to sell these junk policies, because too many Americans are getting ripped off. And when you need health care, you should be able to get it.
Now, these junk policies, you know, these were things that got basically outlawed during the Obama years, right? This is stuff that the Affordable Care Act ensured didn't happen because it had a minimum level of care. There had to be a bare minimum. There had to be a floor.
Yes.
That came with some preventative care and some things that if you did get sick, you had some, you weren't going to go broke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think that many of us may take for granted now that your insurance company is going to cover basic things like seeing your doctor every year for a checkup, if you need birth control, if you need preventative care like a mammogram or a colonoscopy or something like that. We may take for granted that our insurance company will cover that, but junk policies don't have to cover that. They can also get rid of your policy if you have a pre-existing condition. So if you get really sick, they can say, oh, you filled out this form wrong, and so we're going to cancel your policy. And that could have happened to me because I'm self-employed, and I used to have a junk insurance policy before the Affordable Care Act. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2017, and thankfully I had an ACA policy, because if it had happened just a few years before, the ACA policy started in 2014. So if I had been diagnosed in 2013, my junk insurance policy could have said, you didn't report that you had acne when you were a teenager, and so we're going to cancel your policy, and you're now on the hook for hundreds of thousands of dollars to pay for your cancer treatments.
Yeah. No, there are a lot of these gimmicks out there. You know, I had a friend who's, I have an acquaintance who is a Christian warrior. We'll call him that. He's off on the religious fringe. And I like, you know, talking to him because he shares with me his beliefs and the world that he lives. And one of the things they do is this kind of crowdsourcing. Maybe you've seen this. Mm-hmm. I hear it on the radio all the time. You can get Christian health insurance.
Yes, Christian health ministries, and not insurance.
And I don't know who it is, but, you know, it seems like, you know, this idea that, okay, well, someone like him goes, you know, I want to support the church. I want to support religion. I want to support this ideology. So I'm going to get my health insurance from them, and we're going to protect our family. And I'm like, are you sure that you're protected? Because it seemed to me when I heard the ads, it's like crowdsourcing, mm-hmm. to where, you know, everyone, oh, you got sick. Oh, we'll help you. And I go, but what if they don't?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So if you are religious, tithe to your church. Go to your church once a week or more. Give to whatever you believe in. But insurance should be separate from that, because Christian health sharing ministries are not insurance, and they're legally required to not call themselves insurance because they aren't. So they say they will fund you if something bad happens, but it is not a guarantee. And there are all kinds of horror stories about people that paid in, and then when they needed it, it was not there.
Now, is this considered one of these junk policies, or is there some kind of demarcation? Because I look at this and I go, the first time I heard it, I went to this person. I said, what is this? He goes, oh, yeah, we've got it. It's great. And he's explaining all this stuff. And I'm going, sounds like a scam to me. Mm-hmm. Sounds like junk insurance.
Yes.
Is this in that realm, or are we talking about something else?
We're talking about something else, because Christian health sharing ministries specifically don't use the word insurance. They are not insurance.
Oh.
So junk insurance is more like short-term policies that the Trump administration let you have for months and months. And again, they are able to judge you based on your pre-existing conditions. They are able to put in limits, annual, lifetime. They're able to deny coverage and so on, because they are not an Affordable Care Act insurance policy. But they are insurance. They come from insurance agencies. But Christian health sharing ministries are not insurance. So it's like even worse than junk insurance.
Right. So the what you're talking about, this junk insurance, is, you know, you're basically buying into a lottery system where you're kind of gambling. Well, you know, maybe I'll cover cancer, but not leukemia. Mm. Is that kind of what? Because I'm trying to, I know people who have these. They got shiny cards. They got all kinds of really nice, shiny, you know, brochures. And look at how wonderful this is. And I go, but what happens if you get sick? Like, I've got union insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been a Teamster for over 30 years. I've been very fortunate to have Teamster health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when I had my hip replaced, it cost me $120 out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. All the therapy, all the surgeries, all the hospital, all that $120. I knew going in, I was fine.
Mm-hmm.
When my daughter fell and broke her arm, Cost me, I think, like $40 to go to the hospital. I knew we were going to be fine. I want that for everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to have to worry, especially if they've got kids, that a broken arm is going to bankrupt them. Is that too far?
Well, if we were starting our system from scratch, we would have a system where everybody got covered. You know, we would have a system more like in Canada or the UK or even various European countries. But instead, we have this system that has been built on and changed over time. So, like, the building that we're living in is a really weird, badly designed building because people just kept building on extensions and maybe sometimes staircases go to nowhere. But
and we got a trailer out back.
But I mean, the disruption of if we leveled the whole building and started from scratch, then what do people do for the several years it would take to build a new healthcare system? So that's why we see incremental changes. Like the Affordable Care Act was incremental, and you see tweaking and so on. You don't see wholesale changes because it's really hard to get.
Have we been tweaking? I mean, because my hope was when they passed it back in 2010 that we would be tweaking it, much like we did with Medicare. Medicare at the beginning was not great, didn't cover an awful lot. But as it's grown and as you know, people have taken to it, it's gotten better to the point where when my grandmother was alive, I often said that if you threatened to take it from her, she'd beat you with her walker. and I had hoped the same for the ACA, but Republicans have dug in on this.
Right. But thankfully, the American Rescue Plan and then the Inflation Reduction Act has made changes to make the Affordable Care Act better, especially for working class families that maybe made a little bit too much in the past to get financial help and paying for your policy. A lot more people are eligible now, and that runs through 2025. So we're going to see more fights for more working class families in the next couple years to extend that. It is not perfect. Right. It is a far from perfect system, but it is better. They patched some of the larger holes in the road, but it is by no means a beautiful, smooth road, which anybody who looks at American healthcare system knows that.
Yeah, it's not a super highway. Although I got to tell you, you know, I keep saying I think we should let the Teamsters run our health insurance because what I get is fantastic. I highly suggest it for everyone, but it is kind of expensive. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Laura Packard. She's the executive director of Healthcare Voter, healthcarevoter.org, the website. So tell me about the White House. I mean, I've never been to the White House. No one's ever invited me. So what was that like?
Well, certainly you should get an invite.
Yeah. Let me get on the horn and say I want an invite.
Well, in the most pro-labor president in our lifetime, you would think that you would get an invite.
You would think he would come do the show, but you would be wrong.
Well, I have hopes. In the next year or so, maybe.
Next time you're there, drop my card on his desk.
Will do. So let's see. How you get to the White House. First of all, you get an invite in the email that says, you know, you have to RSVP, and they want your name and your Social Security number or whatever. And I assume that's the Secret Service does background check and make sure that you are not a threat to the White House.
Sure.
So then you pass all that. You have RSVP'd in advance. You get put on a list. And so then maybe an hour or more before the event, the doors open. So you walk to the entrance to the White House security. You get wanded through. You get wanded through in various security detectors, several of them. And so people start lining up right around when the doors open because limited seating. And if you want the best seating in the room, you want to be there early. If you are not special, you do not get a reserved seat. So if you want a seat, it's good to be there early. That's
so you
tip.
You got a seat right up front, I'm sure. with a big placard, Laura Packard here, and a big arrow. I'm sure you got that seat.
No, but I was there early so that I could get a good seat. But unfortunately, this time, somebody somewhere along the line inputted my date of birth wrong. So I guess I was...
Did you get tackled on the West Lawn?
No, but I had to step out of the line, and they ran my ID, and they checked out why the discrepancy. And so I actually got younger because they entered my date wrong. So you know, I look exceptionally well. I was younger than they thought. But once you got through, then there's the line of people through the building to the, we were in the east room this time, I think. So
this time. This time.
So, you know, walking through the building, you get to see the portraits on the sides of the walls of the first ladies and the presidents and so on. I saw the White House dog and the White House cat, their pictures.
Did it bite you?
No. Did not actually get to see the White House pets, but I saw the pictures of the White House pets. I saw Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's portraits further in. There is a Marine Corps band playing beautiful instrumental music as you walk along.
Wow. I don't know. I want to go now.
And on the way out, the band was playing an instrumental version of Closing Time, which I thought was quite a nice touch. So they stack these events, I guess, pretty frequently. So when the event is done, they want you out. So they play Closing Time. There are various, I think, I'm not sure if they're all Marines, or there are various uniformed security personnel that very forcefully make it clear that it is your time to go.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, they're playing Rawhide on the way out the door going, yeah, you can't stay, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here kind of thing.
Yes. And so this event had press. So there was, I don't know, maybe 100 or more chairs. And then the back of the room was where the riser was with all the press. And so you can tell when the president is coming in, because then all the press, they all aim their cameras. Everybody's turned to look at the president coming in. And, you know, the photos are clicking, the cameras are clicking and everything. So you know when things are about to start. Right. And not usually on time, so brace yourself, use the restroom beforehand, get there early, get a good seat, be prepared to wait. And for all of these events, I believe, at least this was a healthcare event, and it was healthcare people from around the country had gotten invited, people that had been doing work on, you know, reining in junk insurance. So there were people in the room that were from the Washington, D.C. area, but there were also people like me that flew in from around the country. So it's kind of cool to meet people that you've been working on policy-wise for years, maybe, but never met in person. And this is the big celebration, because sometimes we do get nice things. And so it's great to celebrate when that happens.
Got to take the wins. Got to take the wins. No, I'm listening to you. I'm making notes. If it's ever going to happen, if I'm ever invited to the White House, I don't think it's going to, but if I ever am, I will take that. Because look, I remember, you know, seeing Mike Tyson and Leon Spinks fight back in the 80s, and it was one of those things that, had I taken your advice, had I gotten there, you know, gotten the seat, gone to the bathroom, I probably wouldn't have missed it.
Oh no.
I went to the bathroom, I came back, fight was over. They go, oh, fight's over, you missed it.
Oh no.
So this would be my luck. I would go to the White House, president would probably come in, I'd go to the bathroom, he'd come in and come out, where'd he go? That would be my luck.
Oh, and speaking of the bathroom, at least the women's restroom is very nice. It yes, there's like a waiting room with portraits and stuff, and then there's the actual restroom, and then there are they aren't cloth, but like heavy duty paper hand towels with the White House seal on them.
Did you take some?
I refuse to answer that question on advice of my lawyer.
I would have taken some. You got to throw them out anyway, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole waste bin for the used ones. So
I would just pretend to use it, fold it, and put it in my pocket.
I may or may not. I cannot speak to that. Next question.
But no, that's an experience. And good for you. I mean, you do a lot of work. Being recognized is extremely important. And that's what I think this administration has done well. I wish they would get out and do more, you know, tooting the horn, going, hey, look how wonderful we are. Hey, look at what we've done. You know, my idea of 20-foot cardboard cutouts of Biden pointing out things, going, hey, I did that. Mm-hmm. I hope they'll eventually come around to. But we'll see.
Well, I know that the administration has been doing road tours where, you know, like all of the cabinet officials get out and go around the country and talk about the work that they've done. Yeah. So I assume and I hope that they will keep doing that this summer.
I'm with you. So lastly, road tour that you're coming up in August. What is it? And is there a website we can go to check it out?
Protect Our Care has done these bus tours for several years in a row now.
And who are they with?
protectourcare.org. They are their own organization. I don't know if there is a website yet, but you can go to protectourcare.org, sign up for their emails, follow them on social media, and you'll find out more.
I am looking forward to it.
Kicks off, I think, July 31st, and for the month of August, we will be in all of the important places. So sharing our healthcare stories, calling on elected officials to do better where they have voted against our healthcare, celebrating the people that have voted to make prescription drugs more affordable, $35 insulin thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, and much more. So come into a city near you.
Good stuff. Laura, I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Laura Packard, healthcarevoter.org, the website. She's the executive director. Make sure you check out the website. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. Back here from Netroots Nation, right back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1944. That was the day Local 212 UAW workers at Briggs returned to work. Briggs was directly involved in war production. 3,000 workers on two shifts made ball turrets for heavy bombers. Workers on both shifts walked off the job when management at the outer drive plant carried out a series of transfers and layoffs while expecting the same level of production. It had been the second walkout in a week. Management set a precedent of refusing to settle grievances of any kind. They routinely snubbed the union, insisting that they take any and all grievances to the War Labor Board. Local 212 president Jess Ferraza noted that it would take anywhere from 12 to 18 months to get a grievance processed. Workers were fed up with waiting. He added, quote, "It was like a fireman with a water bucket running around trying to put fires out. Management never cooperated. If the grievance were a justifiable one, they would not settle it. They would tell you to get the workers back to work." The strike came on the heels of a contentious state CIO convention earlier in the month. There, delegates debated the merits of the no-strike pledge. Local 212 delegates were among a full third of the total delegates who made known their opposition to the pledge. Ferraza argued that, quote, "The no-strike pledge has tied labor's hands, and as long as our hands are tied, the corporations will continue their attacks on labor." Briggs workers agreed to return to their jobs on the promise of direct settlement of grievances. They also geared up for the National CIO Convention, intent on overturning the wartime no-strike pledge. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two.
Do mass protests matter anymore? Even when large numbers turn out with a high level of outrage directed at abusive corporate or governmental elites, the powers that be usually just hunker down and wait for the fury to pass. But the one form of protest that actually gets to even the most aloof elite is cultural caricature. In recent decades, the creative deployment of giant puppets, satirical songs, pop-up parodies, and other forms of social mockery has pierced the ego shields of haughty corporate chieftains and puffed-up politicos. They ignore angry speeches, but public ridicule stings them personally, energizing the larger community. Consider how common household utensils can rally the people's discontent, rattle the establishment, and deliver a message of revolutionary protest. In recent years, mass rebellions, armed with nothing but kitchenware, have noisily made their points in such disparate places as Chile and Iceland. And today, the people of France are bedeviling their country's aristocratic wannabe, President Emmanuel Macron, with a ceaseless mass clanging of skillets, saucepans, spoons, and other plebeian cookware brought from their French kitchens into the streets of every region. They are protesting the president's imperious decision to undercut their pensions, as well as his tone-deaf refusal even to hear their complaints. So their voice has become the incessant banging of pots. Now, Macron can't go anywhere without being greeted and often drowned out by the cacophony of casserolade, the saucepan movement. The protest is driving Macron crazy, which seems to be a very short ride for him. Clearly irritated by the commoner's cleverness, his government is now using anti-terrorism laws to ban, quote, the use of portable sound devices in protests. This is Jim Hightower saying, the crazier he gets about pots and pans, the louder people laugh at their leader.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Back here at Netroots Nation in Chicago as we're finishing up our third day of coverage of the event. You know, again, you know, we've talked about all of the people that we've known over the years who have come back and have spent time with us. But my next guest is someone who, well, I don't think we've ever met at Netroots, but she's been on the program before and one of the folks that we bring back on. Quite often, the folks at the Patriotic Millionaires, they're here as well, looking around. I'm kind of interested to hear what the experience for Kat Hadley is. She's the state campaign manager for the Patriotic Millionaires. PatrioticMillionaires.org is the website. Kat, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what do you think of the powwow, the shindig? First time to one of these?
It's actually my second time.
Oh!
So we were here last year, yeah.
How do I not remember that?
I don't know. That's okay, though.
So what do you think? What are you getting out of this? What's the idea?
Yeah, I mean, so I came here. I really wanted to just kind of hear what other people on the ground were doing. And we're launching a new great economy project in PA. So I was able to connect with a bunch of different PA organizers who are kind of boots on the ground already doing this campaign work. So for me, that was an absolute win.
When you walk into a room and go, I'm with the Patriotic Millionaires, everybody's got to come.
Well,
everyone's got to know Kat Hadley, the Patriotic Millionaire person. That's got to be easy to go, come, this is what I need.
Yeah, well, I make it clear that I'm not a millionaire, so I think that does help. A lot of people end up walking away at that point. But, yeah, I mean, people are interested in the work. I think the name alone, people are always like, what do you mean by that? And so I always have to clarify, like, these are the things I'm working on, which is higher livable minimum wage, political equity for everyone, and then, you know, higher taxes on the rich that I work for.
Yeah, so, this is the message of this whole, or should be the whole message of this conference.
Yes, agreed.
So as you're talking to these folks, because I've often said, you know, in this arena, you get a bunch of people who come together who have their ideological issue. Mm-hmm. This is my issue. This is my silo. And they don't necessarily play together very well. What are you finding? What are you experiencing as you come with your issue, which I think is broad-based and something that everyone should be going, yeah, duh, this is a good place to start. Because out of this, we can get everything else. Mm-hmm. What are you getting from people?
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I think that people have some interesting approaches on how things should work. People are not hesitant to share those approaches.
No, they're not.
And so,
and that's good,
you know,
for me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, and I think that, you know, I had a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, you should be approaching it this way, or why small cities? You know, you could be in big towns doing this work. And so just trying to come back to the idea of, you know, no, we're really targeting smaller cities in America and trying to empower the people that are often left behind in this room. You know, like, right, there aren't many rural organizers here. And the ones that are have been incredible and kind of can immediately tap in and say, oh, you know, one thing I really love about rural organizers, not against anybody else, but what I've noticed about the rural organizers is, it's like immediate resource sharing. Like, how do I help you? How do, right, I, like, here's a person I know. Let me connect you to this person. Or, you know, the people that are doing labor work. I bought her book. But, Kim Kelly is here. I don't know if you saw. You know, but, you know, immediately saying, oh, I know somebody that works in this area. Can you, you know, hit me up and then I'll connect you with them. So I came here for the resource sharing, you know. And then on my end of that, too, is saying, you know, hey, I'm going to need people to join this team. I'm going to need workers in this area. Do you know anyone, or are you somebody? So it's been very helpful in that way. And I think that the rural organizers are incredible. So, yeah.
No, look, when I first started my radio program, when I started doing this 18 years ago, in a very red area, in a very rural area, people are like, well, why bother? I go, this is where the fight is.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
This is where the hearts and minds can be changed. This is where we can move people, mm-hmm, in their interest. And look, you know, the reason that I think it's so fascinating that you guys are doing what you're doing is because you're going into places and you're fighting the narrative that they've had their whole lives. That, you know, this idea that, you know, we should not tax rich people because they work so hard. And then you sit down and you talk to people who actually work hard, mm-hmm, and you get them to realize that, wait a minute, maybe we should be doing better.
Yeah.
And maybe this is the way forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Yeah, I think in America we have an issue where people assume that their poverty is a self-inflicted thing. You know, like they don't have, basically what we're going and doing is going into areas and giving people the data to back up their live experience, to like understand that, you know, poverty wasn't a choice that they woke up and made. Like, jobs have gotten worse, unions have gotten weaker, you know, CEO pay is shot through the roof where your wage has been stagnant, even if you're working 10 times more than you were 10 years ago, that income is not going to get higher for you. And yep. So I think that's the really important key there, is just to give people that data to say, you know, your lived experience, and you're not alone. You know, one thing we're doing is building a community where people can learn together, like, this is not just me walking through this.
No, that's an important point, because I think most people, when they're struggling, they internalize it and they close off.
Yep.
You know, because, you know, everyone else is doing so well. This is only me, and I don't want to be the outcast. I don't want to be the other. Yep. When everybody's struggling, man, everyone, the wages have gone down for everybody virtually, especially if you work for a living, which is why I think it's so important that you do this kind of stuff in the places that you're doing it. So that there is that kind of mindset that, you know, we can do better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because look, it's been, you know, 40 years of, you know, government's the problem, and, you know, we need to give the rich people everything because something may trickle down on us or whatever that theory is. And, you know, we know that's not true.
Yeah, it's not. And it never was, you know. And I think that, you know, one thing that drives me bananas in a lot of areas is that, you know, people often, like, you know, we saw like the freeze in Texas, and people are like, oh, well, you know, if people don't like it, they can move. And I'm trying to explain to people, like, that is not how poverty works, you know. And it's really disappointing to hear it from fellow progressive activists, where the idea that these people aren't worth talking to, right? Because I think that when we decided that these people weren't worth talking to anymore, that's when things like conspiracy theories and the extremists, like, they can creep in a lot easier.
Yep.
And so, like, when we made that decision to just kind of walk away from these folks and just say, well, you don't agree with me, or you won't vote the way that I want you to, so I'm done with this. And, you know, I really want to start combating that message, because I think that talking to these people, you know, for a lot of folks, you know, when we were in NC, it's like, or North Carolina, you know, oh, you're the first people to, like, just come and talk to us in a long time. And it means a lot.
No, absolutely. And this is where I have said over the last couple of years that, you know, I used to be liberal, and I'm now moving more towards the center, because I think, you know, the polls keep getting further and further apart to where we're not talking to each other anymore. We're siloing up, and we're standing on the sidewalks, you know, yelling mean things at each other, where we need to get back into the middle of the road and duke it out. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean physically duke it out, but, you know, chew through these issues. Is a tax rate of 15% what we should be giving our patriotic millionaires to move money from one pocket to another? Or should we go back to the good socialist days of Dwight David Eisenhower? We should be having these conversations, and sadly, we're still not.
Yeah, and I also think that there's something to be said for, you know, there's a theory that I have, which is, it's a lot easier to lower taxes on the rich, to not raise minimum wage, to do these things when people are distracted.
Right.
You know, and so no matter who's been in office, we've seen the taxes on the rich decrease. And, you know, that's, you know, so sometimes I think some of these things are a distraction tactic where, you know, you don't have to focus on this. And then also, I would argue that if everyone's living in a better economy, that it's going to be that there's less tension when we're in, you know, we're in some of the highest inequality we've seen in decades.
Absolutely.
And everyone is feeling that squeeze. And so I think that, you know, it's fair to be angry right now. Like, life is hard. You're working 40 hours a week and you can't pay your bills and you're in debt. And, you know, frankly, you know, Congress.
Not just 40 hours. Look, you know, yeah. I say this all the time, and I've said it probably, you know, more this weekend than I ever have. You know, there was a period during my grandparents' era that one income could support a family. Mm-hmm. You could buy a house, cars, vacations, send the kids to college, retire, all that stuff. The economy was set up that was possible. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Reagan era, you know, forward, two, you needed, couldn't get by without two incomes. I'm arguing right now we're in the 3 or 4 income era. Yeah. You know, you look at Iowa, child labor laws. We're putting kids back into slaughterhouses so families can survive. These were policy choices.
Yeah.
And as you're going around the country, and you know, Whiteville, North Carolina, you're now in a place in Richland.
Richland Center, Wisconsin.
And then you're going to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we're
going to
be in Scottsdale, PA. I think we're starting sometime in September. We don't have
I can't find
date.
Any of those on the map.
Oh, well, they're tiny, but tiny that's but why powerful.
But that's why I think it's important that you're doing what you're doing. You're going into places that either used to be or nobody knows about, and you're actually engaging with people for probably the first time those folks have had that. That's why I think it's so important what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much. I really love what we're doing, and the people are great. We just launched Wisconsin, and you know, I'll say for anybody listening that thinks that rural people aren't paying attention, we had over 90 people show up to the first meeting in Richland Center. And so, you know, I think that people are ready to act. And one thing that's been really beautiful in North Carolina is seeing people across party lines. You know, we joke that it's Democrat, Republican, you know, independent, and then hate them all. You know, that and hate them all tends to be the biggest group. But no, they're look, all there.
Because I'm in that category a lot of times.
Yeah.
We all are at some point. Because, yeah. Look, I've said it before. There isn't a political candidate I've agreed with 100% on anything.
No. There never will be unless you run. And then you'll agree with yourself.
No, I don't. And this is the weird thing. I don't even agree with myself 100% of the time.
There you go.
There are times where I'm going, I'm not 100% sure. There's room for debate here. There's room for someone to help move me in a different direction.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Kat Hadley. Kat's the state campaign manager for the Patriotic Millionaires. Check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. So, again, coming here, as I've been saying for a while, you know, there are all these great issues and all these great ideas, but it's not going to really amount to much if you don't get people voting. And, you know, and a part of what you do is, you know, mobilizing people to lobby, you know, elected officials to talk about minimum wage, mm-hmm. to talk about sane tax policy, to talk about good economics. But again, doesn't it come back to the, you know, getting that ballot in the box?
Well, we don't directly work on that. Right now we kind of live in a space where we're trying to get people to just engage with these economic ideas. And so the program's kind of laid out like this. So we have 5 sessions. And you come in and we just bring different experts in to talk about economic issues. At the end of that, we just say, do you want to do anything about it? So in North Carolina, in Whiteville, that meant almost the entire room saying, yeah, we do, which was a great surprise because I was hoping for 10. We ended up with 60. And actually next Wednesday, we're going to be in Raleigh taking a bus full of Whiteville people up to meet with Democratic and Republican senators and representatives from their state on this issue. And you know, what they're asking is just, you know, come to the table. Like, you are our chief negotiator. We do not, you know, minimum wage people often lack union representation. We don't have people that can argue this. You are the person that needs to argue this for us. And so I'm really excited to see them kind of step into that and just thrilled that they wanted to do that. Like, they went to their city council. They got a letter of support from them. They went to their county commission and got a letter of support. They started a petition online and got over 200 signatures on that. And these are folks that when they walked in the room, some of them have never voted. And who knows? I assume that, you know, one hope that I have is that through this program, not only do we get people more engaged, but also considering looking at their party and saying, okay, if you're not doing any of this, then I'm going to run. You know, because that's how that start that's happens.
And this is where I want to finish up on, because part of it, and look, as a union guy, you know, I've watched people get union jobs and then start to understand what it means to have that power, mm-hmm. to make change, to have a voice, to be able to influence their day. You see that growth. That empowerment. Are you seeing that? And is it exciting for you as it is for me in a lot of spaces?
Yeah, it's thrilling. And I think the biggest thing that I think the unions do this so well is it's building a community, right? Because these people feel empowered because there's a room full of their neighbors behind them that know this and care about this with them. And so that's been excellent to see. And that's what I'm really invested in growing is this community that just won't take low wages anymore, because we, you know, Patriotic Millionaires is incredible and has some great earned media and we've done some stuff, but on a policy level, we still have the same minimum wage, yeah, and the taxes are still in where they're at. So maybe if we have the people from the top and the people from the middle and the bottom all demanding the same thing, we can actually make progress on this.
There you go. I find it amazing that there are rich people, the people who won the game, who are willing to step forward and say, look, I want a better place for everybody. It's great stuff. But Kat Hadley, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts. She's the state campaign manager for the Patriotic Millionaires. Check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media. Quick break, right back here from Chicago at Netroots Nation. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to Netroots Nation here in Chicago. Hope you're enjoying the program. And look, again, you know, check out our website to make sure you get the latest on where we've been, who we've talked to, and you know, some of the other stuff that we're doing here. But while we're here, I'm talking with Rebecca Ratcliffe. She's a statewide organizer for Fair Vote Illinois. The folks, one of the exhibitors, I believe. Rebecca, thanks for taking some time for us.
Happy to be here.
So what brings you here to this event? What is it that's got you here?
Yeah, so Fair Vote Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, and our sole mission right now is getting ranked choice voting across the state of Illinois. So we are here to spread the word about that. We're also here with Rank the Vote, which is a national grassroots organization working on getting ranked choice voting everywhere. So, you know, no matter where people are, we're happy to have them sign up with us.
Good. So ranked choice voting, tell me what this is. Pretend I know nothing. Walk me through what you're talking about.
Yeah, ranked choice voting is a simple upgrade to the way we vote that gives voters more voice and more choice. And it does that by allowing us to rank multiple candidates. So first, second, third, if we so choose. Now, the reason for this is because with ranked choice voting, you need to have a candidate needs to have a majority support. So that 50% plus one to win. That's not always the case with our current system. With ranked choice voting, you get that. And because you get to rank multiple candidates, it makes it so voters really feel like they have a lot more voice in the election process. They never have to worry about something like splitting the vote between multiple similar candidates. They also get rid of the worry of wasting the vote, maybe if they want to vote for a lesser known candidate or a third party. So it's really...
So an example, if you know, there's someone, you know, on the ballot, there are three choices, you know, like say the Green Party, the Democrats and the Republicans. If you wanted to vote for the Green Party person, knowing that they're never going to win, mm-hmm, you could do that. And then your second choice, you could vote that way as well. And your vote would eventually count.
Exactly. Provided no one got to that 50% number in the first round, which a lot of times doesn't happen when you have three or four, then it makes it so you don't have to worry about inadvertently helping someone else win who you don't want to.
Right.
Want to win.
No. Look, and then what's the difference between what you're talking about, ranked choice voting, and instant runoff voting?
So those are actually the same thing. They're two different terms that are used. Instant runoff voting is often, that's the term we use in places that have runoffs. So we are starting to do a big push in Chicago, and we'll probably often refer to that as instant runoff voting here, because in Chicago, we do have runoffs. In our last two municipal elections, the mayoral races have gone to runoffs. Tons of aldermanic races have gone there. So with instant runoff voting, ranked choice voting, it gets rid of that hassle for the voters, saves taxpayer money.
No, the reason I was going to bring it up is because of Chicago and Georgia. You know, I spent a lot of time in Georgia. They seem to be doing a lot of these runoffs. So having this ranked choice of being able to say, hey, you know, I want to vote my conscience, but I also don't want to throw my vote away. I think that's important. And then saying, look, you know, we should be going to the polls once. This all should be part of it. It seems logical, seems rational. How come we haven't done it?
You know, the main thing is just not enough people know about ranked choice voting. So that's what groups like Fair Vote Illinois are doing on, you know, for our state. And then there are groups on almost every other statewide level, because you do have to get this state by state, that are working on it. In Georgia, there's a group called Better Ballot Georgia that it's definitely, you know, trying there so they can get rid of those runoffs that seem to happen every 2 years.
Yeah, because look, as working people, we ain't got time to go take a day and go vote and stuff.
Exactly.
It's hard enough getting people to get out on that Tuesday once every couple of years.
Yeah.
Or once a year, everyone should vote every year, every cycle. The most important elections are those ones that don't get any attention or any money. Those are the ones that, well, affect your life the most. And
definitely,
I think we need to keep talking about that. Everyone's going, oh, we're going to vote in the presidential. No, you need to vote in the off years and the off years as well, don't you?
Yes, yes. But when we're asking people to come out multiple times for a municipal election, that's a really heavy ask. That's a ton of work we're putting on the organizers and everything that we just don't need to be doing anymore if we put ranked choice voting in place.
So what's the argument against this? And you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rebecca Ratcliffe. She's a statewide organizer here for Fair Vote Illinois. Their website, fairvoteillinois.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. So what's the argument? To me, sounds like a great idea. Should have been done all along. I can't believe we haven't done it since. What's the argument against it?
Yeah, there aren't really any solid arguments against it. There are.
Oh, come on. Conservatives.
Yeah.
There's got to be a conservative argument to go, no, this is how they're going to rig the vote.
There are some people who are concerned that might be the case, but that's not reality. The one thing we will say that could be seen as a con is to fully utilize the ranked choice voting system. That does require a little more of the voter. It, you know, you can still just vote for one person if you like, but if you've got several candidates on a ballot and you want to actually vote for several, that means that you're going to have to do a little more research.
Is that what we want? Active, engaged?
I think that is what we want, yeah. But, I mean, you will have some people who say, well, not everyone's going to do that. And it's true that not everyone's going to do that, but I think we should be putting systems in place that incentivize that good behavior.
But if everyone isn't doing that, you know, shouldn't it matter for the people who are? Look, you can still pull the lever for the red hat or the blue hat.
Absolutely.
You know, you can look, if you're not happy with either red hat or blue hat, you can put Mickey Mouse in as your first choice and then vote for who you think is the better of the evil. No, I mean, because that's how I see this. There are times where I have voted for people for in elections where I don't like either candidate.
Yes.
But I'm voting for who's going to be the less evil, who's less bad.
And that's not a great position that voters are often put in.
Right.
And
so this gives me an idea.
Yeah.
Hey, I can go. I know Mickey Mouse isn't going to win, but you know what? I'm going to go write Mickey Mouse's name, because enough of us go and write Mickey Mouse in. Maybe both bads get better.
Exactly. And we're able to start seeing with, you know, third parties or even not necessarily third parties, but maybe newcomers in an area. If they have really good ideas, we're able to start seeing the true support that exists for those ideas, since people are able to vote their conscience and everything. And maybe that starts to shift politics for our two parties, which we don't expect are going anywhere anytime soon. But right now, there's a real lock on those. It's a very binary system.
So let me ask you, now obviously this isn't just made up out of whole cloth. There are places that do this, right?
Oh, yes. So there are several countries that have used them for that have used ranked choice voting for centuries: Australia, Ireland, and then in the United States, Maine and Alaska. They're using it for all their federal, statewide, many of their municipal elections, and there are also over 50 municipalities throughout the states right now that are that have been using it.
I think somewhere in Louisiana they've got, I think maybe New Orleans maybe.
I'm not sure if there's somewhere in Louisiana.
I'm remembering, off the top of my head that there was something like that. Because, you know, it is working in certain places.
Absolutely. We have, yeah, and we always do a lot of voter polling and everything in places where this is instituted. And what we're always seeing is that voters say they like it, it was simple to use, and they want to keep using it.
All right. So for us to get more information, obviously, fairvoteillinois.org is a place to go. Other resources that folks can find?
They could go to rankthevote.org if they are, you know, if they don't live in Illinois, and then they can get hooked up with another state.
Good things. Good stuff, Rebecca. Lastly, thoughts of the big event here, the big shindig?
It's really great so far. Yeah, this is the first day we're here, but just excited to meet more groups, and we've got a panel tomorrow from...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
News.